Scott.
Yes.
Good morning. My name is Lisa Baker. I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of this congregation. We're going to do the beginning of the service in a slightly different order from what's in your order of service. We're going to have the welcome and announcements before the prelude. We welcome all at the UU Fellowship of Northern Westchester, regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religious background, or political affiliation, factors that can divide or separate people in the larger culture. Visitors who are with us today, if this is your first time visiting us, please join us after the service for refreshments and conversation. Feel free to take any of the brochures that you find out in the entryway about UUism. Please sign our guest book so that we will know that you were here. Please feel free to talk to us after the service, especially those of us with blue dots. Mine fell off, but that indicates that we're members of the fellowship and that we're happy to answer your questions about the fellowship. Because our services differ from week to week, especially currently as we're lay-led, we encourage you to come back more than once to get a flavor of our different services, which are sometimes lay-led and we sometimes have guest ministers. Now is also the time to turn off cell phones. And parents of small children are reminded that we have a babysitting service. If you choose to keep your children with us in the worship room, please respect our need for this to be a time of quiet and peaceful reflection. We have a few, thank you. We have a few announcements this morning. So first I'd like to ask Scott Dyer, our president, to come up.
Good morning, everyone. Glad to see you all here today, and for so many of the faces who were at that wonderful party last night at Peggy and Graham Clark's house. What a wonderful feed that was. I know I didn't eat breakfast this morning. Wanted to say something now, which I announced at the party last night for the first time, and which you'll be reading about in the newsletter in times to come. We had a fellowship forum meeting here on Friday night to discuss whether to engage the services of an interim minister and under what circumstances and things of that nature. The outcome of that discussion was that there was a consensus among the participants, not unanimity, but a consensus, we are Unitarians after all, in which there was a desire to engage the services of an interim minister. And the board is in the process right now of making that happen. We met as a board immediately following that meeting. We are getting our applications together. It is a fast-paced process. I would imagine that by this time next month, we may well be able to report that we have engaged an interim minister for next year, with the possibility of working with us for the following year as well, depending on our needs and the minister's desires. The board has decided to make a significant commitment of the congregation in this purpose, and that is to offer a salary all up, benefits, housing, and all of that, which would bring us to the level of approximately $73,000 for the year, which is the UUA recommendation. On top of that, there will be a requirement, which is only fair, that we reimburse the minister for relocation expenses up to approximately $5,000. So we're looking for a compensation package, all in all, for the minister, interim minister for next year to be close to $80,000, which is at least $10,000 more than our current compensation package for this year was set to be. This is a stretch. We recognize this is a stretch. This is an exciting time. This congregation has always come together and reached these goals that we have set. We did it when we were in search Kent was a minister with us, and we met that goal handily. We have a bit of a challenge this year in that this comes reasonably late in the pledge campaign, and only recently have we voted as a congregation to engage the services of a permanent minister, and also now for the board to take action to bring in an interim minister for next year. We believe this is vitally important to the congregation, and we know that we can count on your support. For those who have not yet pledged, please bear this in mind as you work with Peggy, and we've made her job tougher by setting this bar. As you come forward and think about what you will be willing to pledge to this congregation for next year. If you have pledged already, that's okay. You can pledge again. There's no rule against it. If you reduced your pledge last year because of dissatisfaction with how this congregation was, in your opinion, it's time now to return to prior levels. We have an enormous amount of energy. We have people working very hard here. And to make this the type of congregation that we all will enjoy and prosper in, and we would appreciate your support, notwithstanding any prior protest. You'll be hearing more about this. I don't want to take up more of your time now, but we are very, very excited about this development, and we look forward to be able to bring in an excellent interim minister for next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Carol and Jack Topchick were going to say something about the service auction.
Good morning.
Hi, this is the dog and pony show here.
Please don't envy our suntans. We did not go to Florida to sit by the beach and by the ocean or to watch spring training baseball. We went to Florida to work on the auction.
All week.
For 10 days.
Yeah.
It is on April 30th. It is a very important event, more so than most years. Everybody, please come and bring money. We have sent you a letter and a questionnaire with some ideas of ours as to what you can do. Every member, even me, can do something. And as a Jewish only child, that's a challenge. We need everybody's help, everybody's participation, and we look forward to a really fun auction with some good new ideas. And there's Carol.
And if you have any ideas that you'd like to give us today, we have lots of these forms, and if anybody, you know, just has a quick jolt of some brilliance that they want to write down, let me know. I'll give you a form. You can fill it out right away. Thank you very much.
And one more fast thing. It's interesting that that at least the two of us really don't know what most of you do. It's very possible that what you do professionally can help us in the auction. Help someone do their taxes, help somebody write a will, whatever. Hundreds of different things. So if we get nosy and ask you what you do, that's why we're asking you.
Say goodnight, Jack.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Jack. And finally, Nan DeLand was going to say something on behalf of the pledge.
If you haven't already discovered, it's Pledge Month at the UUFNW. And I take this opportunity to tell you about all the wonderful gifts awaiting you when you make your pledge. First, a community of like-minded souls that are accepting of you, whether you believe in God, Jesus, Buddha, or the Great Spirit in the sky, whether you pray or don't. We would hope, though, that you believe in yourself and that you are in a place of spiritual exploration and that you will let your spiritual community, that's us, help you. Secondly, a place heated, cleaned, and plowed to call your spiritual home. Third, a community of people who like to talk and talk and talk. And a community of people who like to play. A community of people interested in liberal religious education, whose dedication is to being part of that village that it takes to raise a child. A place for quiet contemplation, that opportunity to think without having to explain yourself. And lastly, a place for small group ministries, women's groups, men's groups, choirs, artists' way, and discussion groups, where all aspects of ourselves can be explored in safety. We hope that you find all these things of interest and choose to pledge as much as you are able. And then to think about having all the gifts as part of your life and find yourself able to pledge a bit more. One more thing, and this is an echo of Scott's. We do not have a spiritual leader at this point, neither priest, nor rabbi, nor UU minister. Friday night we talked about this and again decided that a ship without a captain is probably not as satisfactory and as well-directed as a ship with a captain. But if we are to have a captain, we need to dig down even further into our pockets in order to pay his or her salary. It's called the total cost of ministry and sounds more dignified than salary, but it still amounts to dollars. We are the treasury. If we want a community with community activities, a leader, and a place, we need to pay for it. If you choose to avail yourself of all of the good premiums that are listed at the beginning of the pledge, and they're really the reason that I come here, you need to support this station with your pledges.
I want to apologize for those of you who came here today for a service because we're just going to have an endless series of announcements. I'm Joe Simonetti, and I'm the worship assistant for today's service. And today we have the good fortune to have Andrea Lerner in the pulpit. Andrea is our district program consultant. I don't know what the hell that means, but it means she serves the program needs of 52 congregations in the Quad State area. It means she really gets around. She has also been, she has many years' experience as a DRE, many of you, as you know, have I sent out a request for responses about what the UUFNW and Unitarian Universalism means to us, and many of us sent in responses to Andrea's questions and about the meaning of the UUFNW in our lives. And today she will reflect on what she has learned from our responses and offer her insights into ways of going forward. Andrea.
Good morning. Rabbi Nancy Fuchs, in the book Our Share of Night, Our Share of Morning, a book about parenting as a spiritual journey, writes of a conversation with a 13-year-old about religion. She said that after being exposed to a variety of religious services, she invented her own religion, the essence of simplicity. God created the world, and that's it. You die, and that's it. It doesn't matter what you wear to services. Actually, there are no services, just announcements and refreshments. Well, this girl may not have gotten all that religion has to offer yet, but she's begun to appreciate sharing life with others. As she grows older, she will find that she was right not to leave community out of her invented religion. For many, the home a religious community offers is a profound glimpse of grace.
I'd now like to invite up one of our coming-of-age people, Avery Kestenberg, to come up and light the chalice and lead us in the unison affirmation. Please rise.
May the light of this flame illuminate our lives and strive into the Spirit. May it heal misunderstanding and strengthen love. Love is the doctrine of this fellowship. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek truth in love, to serve humanity in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow to harmony. Thus
to be covenant
with one another.
You may be seated. Okay, actually, you can rise again, and you can greet your, sorry. And you can very briefly greet the person immediately in your environment and then and immediately turn your hymnals to hymn 360. Here we have God.
Figured out how to work.
invite the children up, please? Come on down. But I want you to remember that we have like two rivers. See this light-colored carpet? They're like rivers, so you don't want to get your shoes wet or your parents will be a little up. You're sitting in the river. Ah, right in the water. Did you plan that? Good morning. Thanks for coming up. So did you ever say to yourself, why do I have to learn this stuff? Did you ever say that in school or an RE class? What things do you say that about mostly? Math. What? Everything? Well, this is a story about learning. A long time ago, there were travelers traveling far away, and they would camp for the night and travel the next day and camp some more. Had a long journey. And one night, as they were preparing to turn in, they heard a great voice from the sky and a light, and they were astounded. They'd never seen that before. And the voice said, gather as many stones as you can and travel for one day. The next night will find you both happy and sad. Well, they thought a great voice from the sky with a brilliant light would be about world peace or something. And they thought the task of gathering stones was pretty menial, useless. But they remembered the voice and they thought, well, okay, I guess we should gather some. So they did that. Can you help me gather the stones? Put them in my bag. You got one in your hand, don't you? I'm not a mother for nothing. So they put the stones into their saddlebags. They were sort of heavy. They thought, well, our horses might be tired tomorrow night. So they traveled for one day, and they almost forgot about the stones. But as they were preparing their dinner the next night and getting food out of the bags, they came across the stones, and they said, that was strange. But you know, our horses don't need that extra weight. So let's just spill them out by the new river. But when they opened the bag and spilled them out, they found that they had turned into gems, rubies and diamonds and emeralds. And they were really surprised. Can we share? Come on, you can do it. So why do you think somebody kept a rock? Why do you think they were happy? Remember the voice said they were going to be happy and sad. Why were they happy?
Gems are pretty, Paul.
Gems are pretty? Why else? I'm not sure on that one.
They can get you money.
Yeah? So they were valuable to them. Why do you think the people were sad?
They missed the rocks.
They missed the rocks, you think so? Remember what the voice said, the right voice said, gather as many stones as you can.
If they had taken more.
If they'd taken more, what would happen now?
They would have had more gems.
They'd have more gems. So they were happy and sad. Now here's what I think this story means. Sometimes we're asked to do things that really don't seem very important at that moment. Learning math. Learning religious education lessons. But you can never tell which lessons are going to turn into gems. And if you don't pick up as many as you can, you might miss out someday. I bet you your grown-ups could share some things that they thought at the time were not very important, but have turned out to be some of the most valuable lessons of their lives. So I invite you to have that conversation with them as you go home today. Thanks for coming up and have a great RE lesson.
Did everybody get it, Jen?
Okay, and now we'll sing the children out. You can see why they pay me the big bucks to run things smoothly around here. Now's the time in our service when we invite people up, if they wish, to light a candle, to express a joy or a sorrow or a concern. And so we invite anyone up who wishes to do that.
I'm lighting a candle of a lot of concern, actually, for Jerry Morton, who, as you all know, suffers from multiple sclerosis and I think has been declining very rapidly. And I talked to her yesterday on the phone and realized that her husband Greg is out of town until Wednesday. Her home health worker is no longer with her. At 2 in the afternoon, it wasn't clear to me that she had taken her meds or eaten. I couldn't go yesterday, but I'm going to go up today. If there's anybody who might be able to go up on Monday or Tuesday and check in on her, and as she says, she needs somebody to come and just keep her direction. You know, she gets MS has cognitive implications as well as physical implications, so she gets sidetracked and forgets to do things. If there's anybody who might be able to go up on Monday or Tuesday, if there's anybody who... has any other ideas?
I just want everyone to know that I'll be there tomorrow.
Oh, good. So. Jenny's going to be there tomorrow. Good, thank you. Okay, so, and I'll be there today. Anyway, I just wanted to kind of send that out and keep, I know Linda McNeil's been coordinating and she's in Alaska until April, so just to keep her in our eyesight. Thanks.
Okay, we have a candle of joy. Our son Mark, of course, is a part of the coming of age. Is coming of age. He's 14 years old on Tuesday. How scary is that?
We're hoping the maturity will catch up with the body that's growing very big, very quickly.
I'd like to light a candle this morning, somewhat in line with what Lisa just said, for the parents of, the husband of, and the spirit of Terry Schiavo, and for all of us who, at some point in our life, may have to deal with the tough decisions we have to make now because of the advances technology has given us. I pray for all of us that we can get through it with compassion.
I'm lighting a candle for a friend of mine who is turned 51 in December, but it's very unlikely he'll turn 52. Has pancreatic cancer, and I'm lighting for a candle for his children, who I don't really know that well. He's a very dear friend of mine. I know we kind of drifted apart over years, but I guess petty squabbles get put aside when his 13 and 9-year-old are going to grow up without a dad, and I'm pretty sad about that.
Merle Kitchen. I'm lighting a candle for a host for last evening's party. It was a beautiful party, lovely food. Those of you who were there who missed it, tough.
I'm Jane Hewitt, and this is a candle of, again, sort of request for community. I had a conversation with Kay Cole yesterday, and as I'm sure many of you know, she broke her ankle at the end of December, and because of, she has back problems as well, so she's not able to use crutches, and she's feeling quite confined to a wheelchair. She just really enjoyed having a conversation. So if you have a free minute, give her a call.
I'm Graham Clark, and this is a candle of joy. Today is day one of my 9-day vacation. And to kick things off, I'm spending the day in New York City by myself with a car with a tank full of gas and a pocket full of money. What could possibly go wrong, you know? And I forgot. It used to be Catholic. I was raised Catholic. It's Palm Sunday. Saw people walking out with the palms from the churches. And so I'm driving over here today, and I hope to get tickets to St. Patrick's Cathedral. Tonight we'll be hosting a concert of Mozart's Requiem, and I desperately hope I can get tickets to that. And frankly, I never knew so many things were happening in New York City. When I picked up the paper, I was like, oh, my God. So if I don't see that, there's about a bazillion other things to do. So this is a candle of joy, expectation, and a prayer that nothing too terrible happens.
Hi, I just wanted to thank the people who contributed to the polar bear plunge I took a few weeks ago. And I raised more money this year than I have in the past. And I'd like to thank Joe for adding an aerobics portion to the ceremony this morning.
My name's Rebecca Sall. I'm the DRE here, and I never have a chance to light a candle, but I want to light a candle for expectation. I go before the Ministerial Fellowship Committee on April 1st to determine whether I receive preliminary fellowship and can be ordained. And so this is a candle of expectation, excitement after 7 years in process, and fear as well. So just keep me in your thoughts.
I'm Ann Jaffe, and come on, you guys, Kathy Gallagher is going to kill us if we don't light a candle for ourselves as a fellowship and the processes that we're going through and the community and loyalty to what we're about.
And I'll take the last candle for those that are unspoken, and also to thank Peg again, by name this time, that for her overwhelming generosity, and for Graham for not at least getting in the way. I appreciate that.
Okay, time for refreshments. A few years back at General Assembly, the Sophia Foss lecture
Reverend Elias Ferjage Jones, encouraged religious educators to think of themselves as radical transformers of the world and applauded us as we go about our primary work of, as he put it, subverting the dominant paradigm. No slouch as a radical himself, Dr. Ferjage Jones described religious education as a global, holistic process where we are all radically engaged in healing the universe. Race, class, gender, geography, sexuality, spirituality, all of these intersect, affect each other, and are deeply connected, like pebbles sending out ripples in a pond of water, inseparable. It is the purpose of religious education, he said, to address these interconnections, change lives, and thereby change the community. We must challenge the systems that keep us divided by norms, like the norms of whiteness or heteropatriarchy. We must address the norm of being able-bodied by increasing our awareness that we are only temporarily able-bodied. Young people are not the future. The elderly are not the past. We are all the incredibly multi-layered, complex now. We must remove the walls that separate us. Anything else strips us of our real power.
Now's the time to cough up the cash, but is there someone who's here to collect it? Okay, you guys, thank you.
So eloquently put.
Please rise if you're able. Dan, you can sit down if you need to. Hymn number 288, All Are Architects.
Thank you.
My sermon title today is Cornerstone, Keystone, Touchstone, Unitarian Universalism in Our Lives. A more subversive title might be How Lifespan UU Religious Education Can Rock Your World. It was very affirming for me to receive this note once from a member. I just wanted to say that I'm blown away by the job you're doing with RE. The amount of deep thought, vision, and hard work you're putting into it really shows. Your vision for the program is ambitious and right on. It's just what I want for our family from the program, to strengthen and augment our sense of family and the larger community, and to blur the lines between the two. This seemed all about living life without walls to me, and I thought Dr. Farish Ajay Jones would be proud. It's not always easy, though. Nationwide, the average working lifespan of a DRE has been about 3 years. And for a long time, many congregations have been served by gifted part-time DREs, mostly women, and mostly able to do that because of a partner's income. There's an old joke among DREs that someday we might get a real job. But I'm glad that feeling is changing across the continent now, and I think structuring the positions so that it can be seen as professional, a career in its own right, with responsibilities for education for children, youth, and adults. But sometimes the juice and crackers part of being a DRE gets in the way of our seeing what a real difference this job makes in the world. I had a very low point a few years ago, doubting whether I had chosen my profession correctly. When I was about to give up, I had an experience in an intergenerational educational seminar. It wasn't a UU thing, and I didn't know very many people there. But one of the participants stood up one day and voiced a strong anti-woman opinion. A teenage girl stood up and called her on the comment. The next day, another person made a homophobic remark. Again, the same girl stood up. I decided to talk to her on break and tell her I admired how self-possessed and brave she was. Well, it turned out she was a Unitarian Universalist teenager, a product of our religious education system. And it was the right boost at the right time for me. I've never again questioned how much of a difference we're making. The results might be seen a generation out, but they'll be there. So, Andrea, what's with the rocks? Well, I had this epiphany one day about the notion of touchstones and how I could use that word in children's worship. And to tell you the truth, I didn't know what a touchstone was. I just liked the sound of it. I would have guessed it was something of a cross between a Blarney stone to kiss for luck and a worry stone to smooth your cares away. But it's a good thing there's dictionaries. The definition of a touchstone is any test or criterion by which the qualities of a thing are tried, that which determines genuineness or value. A touchstone was originally a black stone used to test gold or silver by rubbing them on the stone and evaluating the mark. My personal vision of our Unitarian Universalist faith is of communities that sustain and challenge every participant, providing both a sanctuary or safe haven for our spirits, but also a laboratory from which to go forth and repair the larger world. In other words, congregations that work for all their members, a UUA that works for all its congregation, and a world that works for everyone. How valuable would it be to have a touchstone to gauge our progress along this path, to see if our actions were genuine and valuable. And I offer today that UU Lifespan Religious Education can be that touchstone and more. Oh my God, there's a page missing. Okay. So first, I see it as a cornerstone, that thing that provides the formation of our life, not just informational, but formational. the basis of what we are and what we believe. Secondly, I see it as a keystone. You know, that stone at the top of the arch. That was holds us all together in community. So, it's a cornerstone to form the basis of our lives, a keystone to conform our lives in community, and a touchstone to reform our lives and keep us on our chosen path. When I was a DRE in Orlando, we had a front pew that was just big enough for two or three children. And most Sundays, we had like wedge-shaped things, most Sundays that first little pew was filled with children. And one Sunday, our district executive came for a visit. That's the Harry Green of your district. As he entered the sanctuary, he walked to the front and sat in our small front pew. A child approached and told him he was too old to sit there. And he moved. But he delighted in retelling the story the next time he visited. At first, I was embarrassed to think that one of our children was rude to a visitor. But after thinking about it for a while, I realized that our children were beginning to feel a sense of ownership about our new sanctuary. Their behavior in this special place was involved and respectful. And that was the RE committee's intention when they proposed having the children in every week. The children there and the children here are forging a bond with a worship experience that can't be formed in any other way. I would be more than happy for our churches to be known as the places where the children sit up front. So how do we do all this? Well, as the story I just said illustrated, the first secret is that we have to be very intentional about it. The second is that a little organization around these life experiences is a very good thing. Many congregations, as I hear yours does, promotes covenanted small groups. These certainly sound like they would go a long way toward filling that community-sized hole in our hearts. A few years ago, I attended an ecumenical training, Creating Healthy Congregations, a family systems approach to creating and maintaining community. During part of the workshop, the Reverend Peter Steinke told us about 11 triggers of anxiety in a congregation. And in talking about them, he said 8 of the 9 of the congregations he had recently worked with, across many denominations, cited lack of pastoral care as their main concern. In the conversation that ensued, we thought it unlikely that pastoral care had been left off the seminary course list, and wondered if our neediness for this care results from no longer being served by other institutions, other care groups, schools where you knew all the teachers, doctors who used to make house calls, companies where we employed nearly our whole lives, and extended families available to lend a hand or ear. In our increasingly depersonalized world, we're all looking for that place where everybody knows your name and you're always glad you came. So we need to develop an environment in which authentic and supportive relationships can develop. Modern society has made this difficult. We're all pressed for time and energy. We need to make the commitment to honor time we spend together by showing up, by spending time together, expressing appreciation, coping with crisis, and learning to live in right relationship. Creative and innovative approaches are necessary to meet the varying needs of families and help them address the destructive aspects of modern society. I like to think of teaching in religious education programs as being spiritual arsonists, lighting fires in people's souls. Roberta Nelson tells us in Teacher as Spiritual Guide, the teacher who listens and hears, who affirms and challenges, who questions and encourages questioning, is the heart of our program. We can overcome resistance to teaching with a vision that engages and supports teachers in their own spiritual search. We must make manifest the miracle that we know happens when teacher guides engage with young people, adults, and with co-leaders and themselves. They become part of a pilgrimage that goes ever deeper and feeds their own souls. So the third secret of success is that you really have to want it. You have to be open to change. You have to make the commitment. You have to show up. Larry Piers, one of our UU ministers, now working with the Alban Institute, often speaks on the subject of evangelism. Now, evangelism is a term that has many negative connotations for most of us, but he stressed we must find a way to tell others our good news, to share with them why it's important for us to come here. I'm sure that those of us who found UUism as adults would have come sooner if only we had known about this wonderful, welcoming, fulfilling experience. Who would have been here sooner if they'd only known? But Larry's right, we're poor evangelizers. We're so poor at this, sometimes we won't even tell our own children that they should come to church when they say they'd rather stay home in bed, or that church is boring, or that church isn't their thing. And I think the best thing we can do in those situations is to tell our children why coming to church is our thing. Many of us found this church because of traumatic indoctrinations experienced in our youth, and we want our children to find their own answers, their own path to spirituality. But here's the key point: they can't do that in a vacuum. I'll share with you the words of Minot Judson Savage, a Unitarian minister. Parents continually tell me that they do not give their children any religious training from the feeling it's taking unfair advantage of their child. They say, I propose to let my children grow up as far as possible unbiased. But if you do not bias your children, the first person they meet on the street or in school or among their friends will begin the work of biasing, whether you will it or not. It's something over which you have no choice. It's something that will be done wisely and well, or unwisely and ill. Now, these words were spoken over 100 years ago, yet they seem very contemporary. And many parents today, as I did, believe they can raise their children in a religious vacuum. But the thing about vacuums is they suck up whatever is in their path, dust and diamonds alike, with no filter to separate the two. Religious education can provide us with this missing filter. Show your children that RE is important to you by asking about their Sunday class, by sharing your thoughts and feelings about what they've learned. Bring them on time. Sit in on the class once in a while. Make Sunday attendance a priority in your life. Make it an event. Dress up. Go out for lunch. Put it on your calendar first and work other events around it. If it's not a priority for you, it won't be a priority for them either. And I give you permission to tell your kids what I told my son a few years ago. He said to me, this is a 13-year-old, you said going to church would make us better people, and I don't think anything has changed. So I said, well, we'll just keep going till it works. And as soon as you begin to treat your brother and sister with inherent worth and dignity, we'll stop. A few years later, the same son wrote, when I asked this question at that church, Unitarian Universalism and this church are important to me because I love my parents. Going to church as a family has made me a better person. It has shown me how to be at peace with myself. I've read that our children's personalities and habits are 90% genetics and only 10% environment. Well, if we have access to influencing that 10%, we'd better be darn pretty intentional about accessing it. How many people here can tell me what's in a Big Mac? Anybody? All together. Two? Exactly. So I would wager that many fewer of you could name the 7 principles and 6 sources. And it's the same for our children. The truth is, you can't bring a child here for 1 hour or so a week, maybe every other week, and expect to end up with an 18-year-old Unitarian Universalist. That requires that we live our daily lives as a living expression of our values. Making a difference in their lives is going to require a partnership between parents, teachers, staff, and everyone in this community. The most important religious education occurs in the home every day by children witnessing the words and deeds that make up our lives. And I'd like to issue an invitation to let the DRE or the RE committee know how they can best suit your family's needs. It's not an empty invitation. They really want to know. And they need to know when something's missing for you, too. Now, if you bought shoes that fit perfectly, you'd go back to that store and buy another pair, and you might tell the owner you love those shoes. And sometimes, though, if you buy shoes that fall apart and don't complain, the owner won't know you stopped coming because of bad shoes or because you moved away or you wanted to commune with nature through your bare soles. So please, be conscientious religious consumers. But you must be forewarned. If you have a really good idea, you'll probably be asked to help implement it. And so it should be. UU congregations have mostly cooperative church schools. Our volunteers teach, chaperone field trips, help in nurseries, provide sweat equity on work days. But most of them will tell you they get as much pleasure and education as they give, and maybe more. So that's only part of the good news. You already place a high value on your participation here. I think if you could refocus your attention on what you love about your community and keep it there, all the rest would just be details. And that's why I've called you all to complete the thought. This church and Unitarian Universalism are important to me because. And I got some great answers. Answers that tell me how UUism forms the foundation of your lives, how it binds you together in community and guides your decisions, how it truly is your cornerstone, your keystone, and your touchstone. So I'd like to read some of them now. I heard cornerstone answers like, we are a family with a young child, and we want our child and ourselves to have a spiritual and moral foundation in our lives. It is important that this foundation respect the differences in how people choose to live their lives, as well as practice their religious beliefs, or if they choose not to practice any beliefs, as they wish. Another, nobody tells me what to do. I flourish in that kind of setting. It places our freedom high above all other values. I'm proud to be a member of the most American religion there is. Unitarian Universalism is a place where each of our lights shines bright. Whether it be at the UUFNW or other UU gatherings, I always feel like I can talk to people who think for themselves and don't just repeat what they may have heard or been taught. Even when we don't agree, there's usually a level of listening and engagement that makes for healthy discourse. I want to be inspired and challenged by the services, to be given something to think about. It calls to me most in meeting my spiritual needs. I have fully adopted being a UU. I am a UU because it feels right to me. It feels comfortable. It incorporates what I believe. I think that this is what the world needs now, a religion that allows for acceptance and respect for individual spiritual journeys in a community environment. If I were to leave this fellowship or move, I would seek out another UU congregation. I am a UU. I heard keystone answers like, we want our child to feel a sense of community and shelter in a place where he willingly wants to participate, not feel obligated to attend out of a sense of duty or guilt. This community should include functions where we can celebrate as a family, but also enjoy as individuals, separate from each other as desired. This fellowship allows me to be connected to the community. It allows me to get to know other people and hear differing points of view in a respectful environment. It creates opportunities for me to grow personally and spiritually. The community as a whole, as well as individuals, have provided me personal support, friendship, and love. I need a spiritual life, and it is better that it not happen in a vacuum. No collusion there. I need to know that there are other folks that view spirituality in some other framework than Christianity or Judaism or even Eastern religions. It doesn't make any difference that my fellow congregants' framework may be different than mine, but it does make a difference they are not trying to change, edit, or add to mine. The absence of dogma or creed allows me to be part of something that is evolving and centers itself on community. I like and need the fact that most people are politically liberal and that even the theists have a fairly broad view of what a universal whatever is. I need this place because I need the community of others and a sense of belonging to something rooted in the community. I treasure the small group experiences like my women's group, which sustains me and cares for me. I value the people in this community, virtually all of whom I know by face and name. I value being part of a community of people who know and support me. I have a history with this community and feel a sense of belonging here. I personally have no extended family within 1,000 miles of New York, so this fellowship is my extended family. I know I can get support and celebrate my joys here. I heard touchstone answers like, "We are a community of free thinkers that appreciates a weekly opportunity to pause for reflection on the meaning and meaninglessness of our lives, to ponder the state of the world around us and its future, to live, think, and breathe with greater understanding and compassion for all of those around us, to value beauty and learn how to see more of it amid the smog of our day-to-day lives. We want a place where we can keep in touch on some level with our own diverse religious backgrounds, a place to enhance our sense of well-being and serenity, and give us a break from the day-to-day annoyances and stress of our everyday lives. UUism is important to me for that reason, healthy discussion and exchange. In addition, though, there are plenty of reminders and opportunities for moral behavior and social action, which to me are the essence of a religion, whether one believes or not. I want my 10-year-old son to be part of a community that is not about achievement or acquisition, but is about something larger, taking care of other people and the larger community, thinking in moral terms about issues in our lives and being in community with others. And finally, I stumbled on the UUFNW, about a dozen years ago when I was searching for a place of worship where I felt at home. When I heard the subject matter of the sermons and readings, experienced the reverence for music, art, and nature to uplift the spirit. When I met people who are liberal thinkers, but also grounded in traditions and values of decency and kindness, I knew I had found a place of spiritual rest and rejuvenation. As years went on, I came to know more about the larger community of the UUA, and I realized that Unitarian Universalism is, in fact, a force for good in the world, a way of solving terrible conflicts and injustice, of softening the ravages of war, hunger, and disease, which the world probably doesn't even realize. I doubt if I could ever go anywhere else or drift away like I drifted away from the faith of my youth, because this is really home to me. A cornerstone, a keystone, a touchstone. What's that worth to you? Let's continue to build together. Thank you.
Would like to invite your comments, reflections, thoughts, and if you can keep them brief, that would be good. But anyone can start. Where's Henderson when you need him?
Hi, Andrea. I'm Pat Compton. Thank you so much for being here today. I was a volunteer DRE here for a while and a Sunday school teacher for a while. And I have two things to say about religious education. One is that one of our challenges has always been to get the whole congregation, even those people without children, to be part of the children's religious education program. I think it's something that many congregations struggle with, is to get teachers. Parents sometimes are tired of being the teachers, and they'd like to sit in here for a while. So trying to get everyone on board with the fact that religious education for the children is all of our responsibility and matters to all of us. And in that regard, one of the things I like to think of is that the children in our religious education program, you know, one of them is going to be my heart surgeon when I'm 75, or one of them is going to be helping to determine whether my feeding tube is removed or not. And so I'd like to contribute to that, to make sure that those are adults who share my values and my understanding of the world. And I think for all of us, now is the time to put into the children, because they'll be taking care of us in the future.
Thank you for a lovely story. I enjoyed that a lot. Thank you for your sermon. Religious education is hard work. Most of us are not school teachers, and those little monsters that come to sit in your class certainly know how to get the school teacher's goat, and they really know how to get your goat. But hang in there, because it's really very worthwhile when they get grown up, like Anne and Simone are grown up now and real contributors, and it's very worthwhile. So do hang in.
I just want to offer what a gift it would be to the parents in your congregation if for 1 year no parents had to teach an RE, no current parents of children in the program. It's possible. Your teaching staff would reflect the diversity of your community, and I guarantee the adults would get just as much out of it as the children. But what a breather for the parents. That'd be lovely.
Good morning, Andrea. Thank you for a wonderful sermon. I want to say, at least I want to admit in public right now that, and I think Carol might agree, I cheated my children. To keep them from the bad, I denied them the good. And I think we all owe it to our children to show them what is good about religion. And I also want to thank you for the other comment about evangelism. I've missed 30 years because nobody invited me to a Unitarian church. And it's been a tremendous addition to our lives, and I wish I had those 30 years. Thank you.
And I guarantee you all know somebody who wants to be here.
This community has worked for our family. I came this morning because Simone encouraged me to. And I went and told Katie Surges, at a memorial service for his father who died a while ago. And Katie's asleep. And so I told her it's her last day of vacation, and I told her where we were going. And she asked me who was speaking, and we didn't know who you were, Andrea, so she continued to sleep. But I also saw that Mary Thiebaud is going to be here next week. And Katie said, well, I'll come back for Mary Thiebaud. So she's coming to Easter Sunday next week from college.
I just want to thank you so much for coming today and offering your insights. And based on the news that we're getting, you're getting an interim minister, I think it's an exciting opportunity for next year. And next year's curriculum will be about social justice. And so it would be a wonderful opportunity for the entire congregation to get involved. So I offer that challenge for all of you. And thank you.
I just want to say two things. One is that I have felt like I'd be willing to do something with religious education, but I don't want to do it if no one else is. So I've always thought that it would be a good idea to just tell everyone, although I'm bigger on this idea than most around here, just tell everyone, you got to do it. You've got to do it either, you know, one or two Sundays a year. You know, figure out, do the math, and just tell us we've got to do it. And just no ifs, ands, or buts. If you tell me to do it, and everyone's going to do it, I'll do it. But I'm not going to volunteer for one more thing that someone, you know, that I'm going to do more than anyone else. I'm just, you know, I'm not going to burn myself out that way. But I'll do it if everyone's doing it. And the other thing I just wanted to say, like Jack, I mean, to some extent, I feel badly. I wasn't ready to come back to any kind of church before we did this time. I had friends inviting me to UU services years ago, and I just said, I just can't be around anyone who believes in God. Even he was like, but most don't. And I was like, even the few that do will bother me. But I got over that. So I'm trying to get over it. Let's play it that way. But I do feel bad, particularly with my kid, not so much that I believe that the Bible's important or any of that crap is important, but I do think that being in community is. And I wish that we had given her the community. And that I feel bad about. Okay. On that, we will sum this up. And is Avery's not here to put out the candle? I guess not. She's not around. Okay. I guess I'll put out.
She's right out in the hallway. You want us to grab it?
No.
It was indeed my pleasure to be here with you this morning, and I'll stick around for a while to answer any personal questions, and I'm just so excited about your future. I'm so glad that you voted to have an interim minister and move forward with ministry. I think congregations ought to staff ahead of growth so they don't ever have to play catch up, and it sounds like you're on the right path.
Okay, so please rise. Two times. Carry the flame of peace and love until we meet again.
Closing words?
Closing words.
Now for all who seek God, may your God go with you. For those who embrace life, may life return your affection. For those who seek a better path, may that path be found, and the courage to take it, step by step by step.